Bush Le Bebes.
Well, hello. Hi, everyone.
Hi, Rage.
Hi.
Hello, hello.
This is a really exciting episode that we have been planning for a long time, pretty much since the inception of the podcast. We've been planning this one.
Yeah, I think this is probably the episode that I have been most, like, anticipatory of filming.
Yes.
Because I'm so excited to talk to you guys and just, like, I don't know, converse about our sexuality.
Well, yeah, welcome to Bush Babies. Usually we do a separate intro, but I think since this is a big episode with a lot of guests, we are just going to hop right into it. As you can see, we have a lot of amazing people here from our community. So we wanted to go around the room and have everyone introduce themselves.
Yeah. Who they are.
Yes, yes.
Why they're here, what they stand for, you know, all that good
Definitely.
Jazz.
I'm Isla. Probably when I was thinking about coming on here, the thing that occurred to me was that on paper, I know it's not a perspective that is so unique, I would say, but I mean, I didn't grow up in this country, so that's a perspective that I think could be, you know, a little different. I grew up in Turkey and then Italy. And those are both places that have, like, vastly different takes on sexuality and gender expression. I think part of the reason why my family moved away from Turkey was that that culture is amazing in so many ways, but also behind in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. Italy, I think, surprisingly, is pretty open as a society, and I didn't really discover that until I returned as an adult after moving away from home. But yeah, I think the way I'm going to be answering most of these questions is from that perspective, of just having seen some different cultures and some different takes.
Cool. We're excited to hear your perspective.
My name is Johnny. I'm just a queer little Latin boy from Central California. Live here in New York now, and I think for me it's all about just living your truth, however that, you know, is best described for yourself. I don't know, I'm very much someone who doesn't like to overcomplicate things, I think, is the best way I like to kind of describe myself. I just like to kind of take each day as it goes. If I love a boy, I love a boy. If I love a girl, I love a girl. I mean, probably not going to happen, but, you know, she's, yeah, I'm just Johnny, I guess, is the best way
I
to put
that.
It. You know.
Love that.
I'm James, and I am just incredibly excited to be here with all these wonderful people. Some of whom I know personally, some of whom I just met, but everyone's absolutely fantastic. I think I'm essentially here to give Isla a run for her money on being the most boring person here. I am a cis hetero white guy from the U.S. Northeast. I have a 1 on the Kinsey scale, not a 0, by the way. I had to look up what the word incidental actually meant in the Webster's Oxford English Dictionary before I got on here. And it means in a way that's just, you know, very casual. So, you know, I think that bisexuality is something I definitely dabbled with. And, like, unfortunately, like, I came up short. And I think it's a huge source of, like, actually jealousy from me. Because, like, I feel that perhaps there's a huge spectrum of, like, the human experience that I'm missing out on. But I'm really excited to hear from everyone on what their personal perspective on it is. And then just kind of give mine. I'm here for the bands, so looking forward to it.
Hello, everybody. My name is Sana Allen. I am friends with Rachel and Rox from outside of this podcast, and I'm really excited to really conversate with everybody here. Outside of this podcast, I also have my own podcast. It's called Yeah, But Who Cares?
Yes.
And essentially what we do is we give surveys on young people and try to understand how they are making decisions, how they're interacting with one another, and really how they're influenced by our day and age. We focus on millennials. Our next season is all about relationships. So I think I was invited on because I have a unique perspective of talking with people and really understanding data and statistically how young people are interacting with other people, how they're dating online, in person, if they are willing to date outside of their preferences when it comes to gender. So excited to really break down and understand how young people are interacting with one another.
I love each and every one of you individually, and I am literally, I cannot wait to just like have this group convo, because I think each one of you brings a different perspective and a unique perspective, but such a special perspective to all of this.
So I guess we wanted to start out doing a roundtable to guide this, but let's start off with the first question is, do you genuinely believe everyone is on the spectrum? And by the spectrum means the spectrum of bisexuality.
And,
go ahead. I was going to say, and gender nonconformity.
I definitely, from my perspective, feel like we as human beings are not just labels that have been made in our society. Like, that concept kind of says it all to me. So yes, I do think that in a way, we are human beings. We are animalistic. We don't see at our root, like, these gender norms that society has built. So I would say yes.
Well, I think the definition of a spectrum, right, is everyone's on it. It includes the extremes. So I think, like, when people say, oh, everyone's a little bi, I love the sentiment. I don't know that it's true, but I think if a spectrum includes people that consider themselves like only attracted to the opposite sex or vice versa, then yes, everyone's on the spectrum because it includes the extremes. And then I think in terms of gender expression and how that plays into it, I feel like that was part of the question. I think that, like, there are some people that I feel like fully...
this earring just won't
it
stay
won't
on.
It won't stay on.
We're running the fight.
Okay, sorry, Isla.
In terms of the gender expression piece, I feel like some people just really don't experiment that much with it and, like, do stay within what would be considered the norms of, like, conventional society. And that's fine, too. But there's obviously a lot of room in between for experimentation. Yeah. So in that sense... you know, yeah, I think people exist all across that spectrum as well. But again, there are the extremes of people who either don't experiment at all or, you know, are totally out there being themselves.
I definitely have to agree. I think I'm in the middle in the sense of, like, I do think people do happen to all kind of be on the spectrum to an extent. But I also do believe that, you know, we are all a product of our environment. So I think depending on how you're raised to kind of feel comfortable enough to at least allow yourself to experiment or just to kind of see things outside of what you're comfortable with.
Put yourself can't in knock it till you try it.
Well, can't knock it till you try it is a beautiful sentiment. And I think that, first of all, one, everyone's undeniably on the spectrum, right? Because I don't know a soul who didn't, as a result of experimentation, learn more about who they themselves were.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're just positing that you have to kind of try it to know, then I agree wholeheartedly. And in terms of, like, the kind of societal gender construction, all that, I just tend to think about someone on an island. Let's say I'm totally alone on an island, right? Like, there's not one other human being around, and I'm born that way.
Yeah.
I have absolutely no idea what gender I am because I have nothing to compare it to, nothing to construct it against.
Right.
Whereas as soon as you introduce even one other human being of any gender expression, of any sexual expression, suddenly I have a way of seeing and understanding myself. So, like, to say that we're all on a spectrum, I think, is true twice over. One, it's true about, like, the material reality. And then two, it's true because in order to even have a way of understanding what I am, like, to some degree, I need to understand what everyone else is. And, like, that's how we get into this world of spectrums and identity. And I personally think it's fantastic that, like, for the first time in a long period of human existence, like, we started to re-engage with these things broadly as a society. So, like, I'm all here for it. I'm psyched about it. And I think, yeah, everyone's, like, undeniably on the spectrum.
You blew my mind just now.
Like,
you
one
really,
one,
you really blew my mind just now. Wow.
Honestly, same. That was so well said.
Damn.
I agree. I think that, of course, with the spectrum, yes, there's extremes, and I really agree with your point that you made. I think an interesting question to pose, which you touched on, is are we in a society in which someone can experiment across gender and sexual spectrums and feel at home and welcome, which I think our generation, me being on the cusp of millennial and Gen Z, like, that might not always have been true growing up. And I think hopefully, as we start to have more conversations like this and young people see conversations like this, they could feel like they can experiment more across both spectrums, because I think that it's also fluid.
Yeah.
So at one point in your life, you may also be portrayed as being more bisexual if you're of one gender and having a sexual relationship with someone of the opposite or the same gender, it might be erased versus if you're in a gay relationship as a bi person. So it might change over time.
Agreed, very much. The next question, I mean, just to put everything into perspective, if people feel comfortable, I'd love to hear about what everyone scored on the Kinsey scale. And just as some brief background, the Kinsey scale was developed by three different psychologists in 1948. So it's kind of the intro rudimentary survey to get your mind thinking a bit more about this spectrum of sexuality that does and can exist in society. It's pretty straightforward. I recommend everyone to take it just for fun because it takes like literally less than a minute. And yeah.
What's your one?
I can't even remember. I think I'm a two.
I was also a two.
Mine was the one directly in the middle.
Three. It's a scale from 0 to 6, by the way.
Yeah, so she gave me a 4. Yeah.
As mentioned earlier, like, I'm a 1.
That's still on the spectrum, though.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, not full 0.
I think I was a 2, too.
Yeah, so does everyone want to go around and talk about why they think they scored that?
Basically, I would say the story behind the rating for me is growing up, I would say my first experiences with, like, sexuality and experimenting with other girls were really young. That's not really talked about that much. People don't talk about it, but like sexuality doesn't have to start when you're like in middle school or high school.
Wait, you're actually so right.
Like sometimes in a very innocent, not necessarily even sexual way, but more exploratory, like curious, childlike way, girls will explore each other's bodies when they're children. And I remember when I got more into those like early high school years, what it was, which I don't want this to come off the wrong way, but it's super honest, was when you're out on a, like, on a night out or at a club, it was like you would kiss your girlfriends to get guys' attention. Mm-hmm. And then for some people, it was literally just to get guys' attention. And for other people, some of us were like, oh, this is fun. I'd probably do this if no one was watching. But that was sort of like the allowable way in which, you know, that was the avenue that we could explore it. So it was a lot of people's first experience, I think, kissing a girl. For me and for some of the people I kissed, we had this feeling of, oh, this is actually fun. This might be something I would want to do, you know, independent of who's watching or whose attention I'm getting. And then I think when I got older, I had some more, you know, less observed and more honest experiences with girls as well. And realize that sort of looking back on those early experiences, a lot of those could be seen in a different light in the context of what I knew about myself as an adult. But of course, when you're young in those moments, I think you just do things in the way that's allowable culturally. Mm-hmm. So that was what felt okay to do. And I did learn a lot from it. As James was saying, like, you always learn something from experimenting.
I feel like now that you're talking about that, that's probably something I've suppressed actually for a long time, because I have this vivid memory as soon as you started talking about that. This is a little bit of a trigger warning, just letting people know. But I had a friend who was a fellow figure skater, and I would sleep over at her house, and she would literally, we were maybe 8 to 9 years old, and she actually taught me how to masturbate, like, and we were 8 or 9 years old. So this is like a very young age, but it was like almost this bonding thing, weird situation. Like, I obviously don't want this to be construed the wrong way either, but it was a very interesting intro into my sexuality, I would say.
And I think being able to do it when you're young and not everything is so sexual is better. It's hard to explain.
Right.
Because obviously it's sexual. It's your body and it's, you know, whatever it may be. Like, and those types of things are sexual inherently. But when you're young, it doesn't have that sexual nature. It's very innocent. Mm-hmm. And it's just children being curious.
It's exploratory.
And it's exploratory. And I think that's a really safe space to be able to explore in.
I also just think, like, it's really interesting that you all are talking about this. I don't have anything as extreme as being taught how to masturbate, but I do remember there's this period in your childhood where you've essentially come into enough maturity that your body functions as it may, mm-hmm. as like a fully formed person, but what you haven't fully absorbed yet is kind of the social conditioning about what is and isn't appropriate. And I think we undervalue, like, as adults in society, how much of what we believe to be okay or not okay or sexual or not mm-hmm. sexual is in fact conditioned by the norms of our society rather than being something inherent. And like the notion that like someone would teach you how to interact with your own body seems awfully natural.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. yet I think there's so much in our cultural zeitgeist that would like cause people to think it wasn't natural. And even, you know, Roxette, like you, I think rightly gave like a trigger warning, but should we? Like, right, is yeah. that something right. that should yeah. be so out of the norm of how people should behave? I don't know. And I remember it being very compelling when Isla first was describing it. I was like, wow, that actually makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely. And I think we were talking in an earlier episode about like these, you know, trigger warnings and even having to label something the way that we do, being gender neutral or whatever it may be. A lot of times, one of our previous guests, Morgan, was saying that she really questions why those labels have been put out there and why we as humans have become so lost in the meanings of those labels that, like, we have to forewarn people. You know what I mean? It's a very interesting point of view.
Yeah. I totally agree. And I think another thing that came up in that episode as well is when the conversations about these topics are no longer needed, that's when we've achieved like full equality when it comes to mm-hmm. sexuality, gender identity, race, when no one else needs to be caught up to date and educated about these things. And yes. obviously we have a long way to go, and that's the whole point of this.
That's the goal.
Is for us to learn with alongside our listeners. But yeah, it's just something interesting to think about that I thought they brought up. Does anyone else want to talk about their Kinsey scale rating?
Yeah, I mean, for mine I got a 4, which pretty much was like telling me that I wasn't definitely gay. You know, based off of just like, I guess, the, you know, my natural choice from what it was saying mm-hmm. is that I'd always go towards, you know, the same sex. But like, I don't know, I come from, you know, I grew up during, at least when I was a kid, in a very small environment where it was like predominantly very masculine. You know, my dad was a boxer growing up, so it was kind of, I was always in this space of hyper masculinity. And so I kind of always grew up also confused, because in the back of my mind as well, it was kind of always just like, I always had thoughts about like wanting to wear certain things or act a specific way. But you know, my dad knowingly now, but then was very unaware of like telling me certain things, like, don't do that because, you know, it's not very manly, or that's not the boys do that. They don't play with that kind of situation. And so I've kind of always just have been very unapologetically myself due to that. So it kind of always put me in this space where I can kind of be a little bit more just very confused, I guess, growing up, you know, in a small farm town in Central Cali, and then having to deal with all these, you know, different smaller mindsets that kind of, you know, try to push me into a box, when at the same time it was equally confusing because I didn't feel bisexual. I didn't feel, you know, all these other like gay. I didn't feel these, you know, these words that people were kind of like trying to tell me that I was, but I was always very like, no, I just want long hair and want to look pretty. Like, what's the issue with that, you know? But yeah, so that's why when I took that test, it was just interesting seeing like it asked like specific questions to give you a specific number. Yeah. And it was just, it almost felt uncomfortable
yeah.
to an extent, because I was just like, this is weird.
I think what's interesting about your story is how at such a young age, parents and adults kind of force sexuality through coded language. So it's like, don't do that because it's not manly. But really what they're trying to say is don't do that because you might be attracted to the same gender, which is so weird to say to like an 8-year-old.
Oh, definitely.
And
yeah.
I remember hearing stuff like that, and it just kind of ingrains in homophobia within the way we talk, even if we're not even being homophobic.
It's so funny because I think it's also very much one of those generational kind of like where it comes from in terms of like your community. You know, I grew up very Latin. My mom's from Mexico. So it's like they do have a lot of ideologies, being Catholic predominantly, about, you know, being interested in the same sex, or, you know, not kind of sitting within those same gender roles. It kind of creates that conversation between the family where they start kind of guilt shaming themselves, like, did I do this to my son, or is this my fault? And even though I didn't like grow up in an environment that felt threatening, you know, my family was always very accepting. It was just, they just didn't, they weren't aware of what they were doing. They weren't aware of what they were saying, because, you know, they come from a generation where that was the norm. That was okay to speak a specific way, you know, so.
I feel like it's also interesting because, Johnny, when you said that you wanted to have long hair and look pretty, that struck me in a really particular way because of some of the experiences that I've lived. And I'm, as an adult, I've got a 1 on the Kinsey scale, right? So I'm not super high into this, like, world we've constructed.
Yeah.
But I think we've come under a false pretense as a society that the rights of traditionally marginalized people are kind of theirs alone, and that it does not do harms to everyone, to the entire society. And I remember growing up, this is a funny anecdote, but when I joined my high school, they gave me the name Purple James. And this is because when I showed up to orientation, I was wearing tight purple jeans. I had hair down to my shoulders, blonde, right? I'm a real skinny kid wearing real skinny clothes. And I had those, I don't know if you remember these, little Wayne used to wear these things called Supras.
So like high top sneakers. Oh my gosh.
Up to here. And I walk into a gymnasium full of kids who universally, every single one of them, is wearing athletic shorts and t-shirts. And I have always been a confident person. But I feel like, in a way, when I look at my trajectory over the course of high school, hearing the F word in locker rooms and people being intense about the way that the coded dressing and language and all this, when I look at what my identity was when I went in and the things that I wanted for myself and that I cared about and where I was when I came out, I had been sort of shaped in a negative way, in a way that was less self-expressive by a system that allegedly was on my side. And I think, you know, I think when we say that it is okay, both collectively and individually, to express yourself in certain ways, not only do certain people win, everybody wins. Because I might still today have, in the way that I was socialized, you know, kept the long hair and the tight jeans. And I think it's like, it's silly. But
I remember my tight jeans.
Yeah. Like, it matters.
I have the purple and the white.
Yeah. I think that's a really interesting opinion, because in a lot of feminist courses that you can take or books that you read, that's pretty much one of the first things you learn about is feminism is about removing this idea of toxic masculinity. And that's, you're pretty much summing up like how you are influenced by toxic masculinity by the culture you were in growing up and in high school. And that's part of it. And it's just as much part of it as, you know, making sure that it's equal rights for everyone. It's like removing this idea that men have to be a certain way and that women have to be a certain way. And I think some of this education as well that has been great over time, even when I was in college, I remember most people didn't understand it, but there is a difference between gender identity and sexuality and distinguishing between that difference. But obviously when we were growing up, if you, Johnny, might have, I don't know, explored like some like certain gender expression or like sexuality tendencies, your parents correlated that with gender identity and instead of necessarily sexuality. And those things were almost interchangeable at that time with the lack of education. So hopefully...
Yeah, because we definitely didn't have as many, I guess, ways of describing our sexualities then as we do now, you know, which I think would be equally just as damaging to an extent, you know, depending on the situation, but very much so, very different than what it was then and now.
Honestly, low-key, I feel like social media and just globalization has really paved a way for so many more individuals to really live their truest life and form. And that is one of the ways that I feel like over the last 10 to 15 years, I would say, why so many people have more knowledge on gender identity and more knowledge on the fact that maybe not everybody is exactly the labels that society has built up to this point.
I think it's also important to call out when we talk about people who are like very brave and people who are definitely on the margins when it comes to gender and sexuality, that even though they're coined as being brave, it's more so it's like a forced brevity, because the people that have kind of paved the way so we can have a conversation about bi people are the Black and brown people who are trans. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting when even to your point, when we talk about people that are marginalized, hurts people at the center, but it's the people that are marginalized that, even though they're marginalized, have to continue to stand up because they can't really hide behind standing within,
yeah,
like a certain racial group or a certain sexuality.
Oh yeah,
because of it. Which I you guys all touched
and
on.
And this is exactly, I mean, I'm with you 100%. I mean, there is no plight from my situation when you compare it to people at the extreme margins, because I can cut my hair.
Yeah.
And bing, bang, boom, I can bleed right back into that safe center where no one can harm you. And yet there are people at the margins. I mean, Black trans people would be like the number one category. People being harmed daily, being killed. So I think there's a special urgency that you have to take on sort of across the spectrum, because it's not an exaggeration to say that like lives and self-image and all this stuff is like genuinely at stake.
Based on that, like, I want to hear about if anyone in this group has felt judged or marginalized for their sexual exploration and their experiences with that.
It sucks. Like, I don't like saying this, but I feel like women at a young age, like as teenagers, are praised for sexual exploration. And so I didn't feel marginalized by my exploration because it was egged on by the men around me. And it's like, it eggs you on. It makes you want, like, you know, and you're just trying to fit in at that age. So it's just, I don't know. It's a very interesting thing. So,
yeah, I think that for sure. That's what came to my mind as well. Like earlier when I was saying that, it's funny because at that age, when you do it in an acceptable, like mm-hmm. allowable way, it's almost, yeah, it's allowable. It's okay. And it's encouraged. And then it flips when it's for your own benefit, right, and not for the benefit of men.
Exactly. And that's heartbreaking to even like genuinely to say that that's the environment that.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing I wanted to touch on, I guess on the topic of parents, and like what's allowable and what's acceptable. Speaking of spectrums, I think my parents are all the way on the other side of the spectrum in terms of they are both, my mom and my dad are both like feminists, and they both raising me in cultures that they knew might inherently be a little bit more homophobic or sexist, really made a point when I was really young to harp on, I guess, being sex positive, feminist, and then also like, they talked a lot about how great it is to be gay. And as a kid, I didn't have context for that. So I remember as a kid feeling like my parents would rather me be gay, it seems like. Because they made such a point of talking about, like, this is okay. Like, if that's who you are, you should say it. And I remember saying to my mom, I'm gay. And she was like, really? Like, you don't have to say that. And I was saying it because I thought that's what she wanted. Because she was making such a point of being, you know, like really, I guess she was overcorrecting for what she saw to be kind of the risks of the societies I was growing up in. But my parents both created an environment that was so, so open. And I think like even James has seen that meeting my family and seeing them, I'm almost like the least not open-minded, but sometimes you would be surprised that that's my family, I think, because they're so, so in some ways out there.
Yeah, I mean, like, just to give like a soft commentary on that, I think we all as like human beings have the parts of the way we were raised that we accept and the parts that we, through no intention of our own, reject, because as part of creating a self-identity, you have to reject the identity imprinted on you. And I think it is interesting because your parents are such hippies at their core. Like they have these incredibly enlightened beliefs. Like you've picked up some of these ideas of like maybe life should have just the teensiest bit of structure. And it is funny to see. It's very
like
cool.
In response to
yeah,
that.
Like in response yeah. to having nothing at all. And I think it's just, it's the way things work on a generational cycle, much like societies.
For myself, I mean, definitely not for my family per se, like my immediate family, like my mom, my dad, my sisters, my brothers. I come from a fairly large family, so like most of my sisters were lesbian growing up, so it wasn't something that was new to my, you know, my parents mm-hmm. either. But I mean, inherently, yes, just because, I mean, me being Latin alone already kind of puts me in a box for a lot of people. So it's like one of those things where it's like, at times you can kind of feel like an object, you know, based on terms of like how people look at you or how they view you or how they see how you're projecting yourself. Like, even like when I wear like a skirt or, you know, something that may not have been viewed normally what a man would wear or, you know, a guy would wear, mm-hmm. Is already sexualized. So I think a lot of that kind of inherently almost, yes. Like,
it's so fucked up. Like, wear what you want.
I mean, it's gross. Yeah. And then, I mean, being queer already, too, is, like, I feel like the queer community is, like, they themselves from a very young age are already, like, very overly sexualized or just overly sexual, you know? We have these apps that kind of encourage that exploration to an extent, you know, and not really doing anything to kind of keep that generation safe, you know? Because, like, for me, I believe in being able to experiment in safe spaces, you know, but at the same time, like, if you're just thrown out there, not really realizing what it is that you're putting yourself up against, what kind of situation are you going to get yourself put in, you know? So that's the way I think about it.
Definitely. I definitely think that with any sexual exploration, it makes such a difference. Yeah. The community that you're surrounded with and the kinship that you have around you to bond over, that really helps to guide you on your path. And, you know, I feel very lucky to have been raised in Southern California, a place that's very progressive with pretty progressive parents that allowed a safe headspace or mindset with any sort of exploration. But I definitely think it's difficult when you grow up in a community that doesn't.
I'm from a town with 3 stoplights. So it was very much like, no lie, 3 stoplights. I used to, you know, I was track star, just always running around my town, you know, or prison town. We're known for Charles Manson and what is his name? Robert Downey Jr.
Oh my
God. It's a whole moment.
Oh my God.
Corcoran, California. It's definitely a different environment. And that's why I find it really funny, being that you're from Southern California and, you know, speaking on how progressive it is. It's really insane to like sit there and be like, at least for me, I feel like a majority of California isn't as progressive as those small, like 2%, 5% areas that were is a bit more open, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I remember this last trip I went home, they still had Trump signs everywhere. Yeah, for myself, you know, not going into that conversation, but yeah,
crazy,
like,
crazy.
It's a whole moment.
I was telling you, one of my best friends lives in Madeira around a similar area, right?
Yeah, similar, it's like, right? Like with an hour away. Yeah.
And same thing, I went to visit her, like, this is way after 2020, and I'm like, what is happening? Y'all, like, you're living in the past.
Different than your experience. I grew up in, I moved around growing up a lot, but I went to high school in Seattle, and I went to an all-girls Catholic high school.
That's a moment.
Yeah. At times, I feel like it did a really great job of illustrating what being safe in terms of your relationships, sexual health, exploration looks like. On one hand, I've had been having sexual education courses since 5th grade, and there was a yearly unit. There was actually a course on relationships, so understanding how to navigate relationships, how to see if your friends are in a potentially abusive relationship, really unpacking why it's so hard for a woman to leave relationships. And I remember being in 10th grade having these conversations, and it's definitely helped me in my adult life as I navigate who I want to explore a romantic or sexual relationship with in a good way that really helps both of us advance. And I'm curious for all of you all, has a lot of your education about sexual health, relation help, gender identity been through strict traditional education, through media, or through exploring with friends?
I mean, I think for myself, it was very similar to like Rocks, where it's like, I think I was able to self-discover through safe spaces that I created through my friendships. I think that's one thing I'm probably most grateful for at that age, because, you know, I think naturally we never are that comfortable speaking to our immediate family about these kind of things. So like, I just naturally didn't gravitate towards speaking to my family, but like, definitely for me, I think all that was kind of thrown at me at a very young age. You know, it was just my brothers and sisters being like, hey, look at this, you know, kind of situation, yeah. Me seeing porn at a very young age. So I think just naturally, I think a lot of the times it's through, I don't know, for me, my connections, my friendships that I made outside of my family.
Yeah, suffice it to say, we had no type of class like that in Rome, but all of it came for me from my friends and from my parents.
I was homeschooled and very, how would you describe me growing up? Like, very sheltered. Sheltered is the word. So, well,
did they even have health class in homeschool?
No, that's the thing. Like, I remember doing, like, one 20-minute video that, like, passed as our passing grade if we, like, completed the video online. But it definitely wasn't enough to suffice actually feeling educated on the topic. Like, 1,000% would not say that. So I definitely think, for me, media and community was like the biggest ways that I started exploring. But in media, it's kind of messed up how we see. Well, now I think media is getting to a better place, but when we were growing up, we didn't see a lot of multiracial couples. We didn't see a lot of gender exploration in media. I am happy to see that media has taken a turn, and I hope that it's not through tokenism or trying to just jump on the bandwagon per se, but it is interesting that we're seeing more representation in a lot of facets in media right now.
I feel like mine was a lot of through community. I remember maybe I was pretty sheltered too. Honestly, I went to an all-girls school, and I said this in our very intro episode, we were fucking weird as hell, not in a hot way, in a weird way, in middle school, because I think we were so sheltered, like, with only girls. And I think maybe I was 12 or 13, and through ice skating, so there was, like, some drama where someone, like, sucked someone's dick.
Yeah.
And I hung out with older kids. Like, all the kids were a couple years older, and I was like, what does that mean?
I do think the figure skating world was such an interesting world to grow up in because of the age range because you are not judged on skill. You're not, like, grouped based off of age, you're grouped based off of skills. So, like, we as 10-year-olds could be around people that are 18 because of our skill level. Yes, you're not competing against people. Like, there are some age restrictions, but it's not like school where you're around all the people your same age. So, like, the older kids, quote unquote, would always kind of instill this fear of sexual exploration just because of their negative connotations.
They did.
You know, we were called prude or this and that, and we're 10 years old, and you're like, what does this even mean? And that was looked at as a bad thing in that community just because of the age gaps that existed, which is interesting.
All I remember is I was so nervous around the older kids and just had sweaty fucking pits the whole time because I'm so nervous.
So, to round off this conversation, how do you feel like intersectionality has influenced your experience?
I mean, just to be completely real, can I get some further clarification on intersectionality?
Yeah, so intersectionality has stemmed from the idea that if you are part of more than one marginalized community, there's crossover in that. So a huge example is during the Equal Rights Amendment movement, it was mostly led by white women. And when like BIPOC women wanted to join the movement and had different opinions because of their, you know, background and personal experience, those weren't always accepted. So there is still within marginalized communities other forms of marginalization towards other communities. So intersectionality kind of represents that, as if you fall into more than one category, how that specific experience might have affected you more than, you know, one form of marginalization over another.
Well, I mean, I think for me, just coming from a Latino, also poor community, I think for myself, what impacted me the most was just being able to be properly educated behind, like, how I wanted to identify. You know, I wasn't subjected to so many things at such a young age. That also wasn't kind of like at my fingertips, you know, because I came from a poor space where I didn't, you know, have computers or didn't know how to like have a cell phone, you know, until I was like 17, you know. Yeah. So it's like for me, just naturally, I just wasn't subjected to those things that probably what could have, you know, saved me at a time when I probably needed it, because it would have given me a better understanding to who I was mentally and how I wanted to, you know, portray myself, I think.
When I'm thinking about it, I don't think it would be honest to say that I feel like I've ever been marginalized, which I don't know if that's bad to say, but I just don't, I've never really felt that because of any identity, which obviously is a huge privilege, but I guess that's my perspective.
And we appreciate that honesty and transparency.
I think that, yes, intersectionality plays a role in a lot of what I do and how I operate as a woman, as a person of color, as a woman of color. I was born in South Africa, but I grew up on Martha's Vineyard and in Seattle. I would say I didn't think I was beautiful simply because of my race, which is so crazy. Yeah. It was like very much, I am not like my classmates, so I'm not even going to put myself in the same category as them. So I definitely put a lot of my eggs into studying or being super athletic because I didn't perceive my beauty as something that could be like used as a superpower, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Which is really sad. And I think that a lot of people of color in predominantly white spaces spoke about that, which was, what is it like to be perceived as a sexual being, as a beautiful person, as whatever, in spaces that you're not seen as being attractive? And how do you cultivate that confidence without external validation?
Yeah.
Which I think is something that we should teach more of, because I think a lot of the movement, and now we're talking about so many different things, but specifically, for example, with like body positivity and body acceptance, trends are always going to be there and people are always going to be excluded out of them. And I was definitely excluded from them growing up. Mm-hmm. But how can we really cultivate expression when it comes to gender and sexuality, when you might not be the blueprint of what is the most attractive?
Yeah, that resonates with me so much. And I think we've even had conversations, not in this podcast, about that. It's just growing up in predominantly white communities, you view yourself as like, well, this is the prettiest girl, or this is the hottest guy, and I'm just like in a whole separate category, and I don't even know where that is, but like, I don't think I'm at all part of this,
like,
you know?
Like, I could never compare myself to her or him because I don't resemble them in any way.
Yeah.
So it's almost like internally, this damn earring. internally, you know, you feel separated from what the identity that you're putting out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I gotta completely agree. Because I, like, just you stemming on that and just talking on that, it just kind of pushed me back to, like, when I was in high school and I used to, like, wear blue contacts and had my hair blonde and used to make people call me Zach. So it was like,
whoa,
you know, like,
yeah,
you kind of go through those phases where it's like, yeah, you can sometimes, I just never viewed, you know, my features because they weren't, you know, predominantly European features. Like, I didn't, yeah, think that I was beautiful, yeah, or pretty. And yeah, definitely.
Thank you guys so much for coming on the show. And I think this was, you know, a great start to a conversation that I hope we continue, and that I hope continues as we go on in society. So if everyone wants to go around and tell our viewers where they can find you, you know, list your socials, any projects you're working on, we'd, you know, love to tell everyone a bit more about you guys.
Back to my theme of being one of the least interesting people here. I have private social media, but you can follow me, I guess. Like, I'll accept you if maybe, I don't know. I'm not going to open my social media, but if your profile seems cool, I'll accept you. And it's just Ayla DeConti.
My name's Johnny, makeup artist based here in New York City. My Instagram and TikTok is I am Kalita. And yeah.
I'm James. My Instagram is Jennings_01. And you're not going to find much there, but if you want to find me, that's where I am.
My name is Sasana. I already said that. You could find me on Instagram @Sasana with underscores in there. somewhere. Or you can follow my podcast at Yeah But Who Cares, which is YA But Who Cares. Or you can follow my nonprofit, which is Anti-Racism Fund.
Yeah, thanks everyone so much for coming on. We're just obviously going to close out with our classic
hot takes.
Tale of hot takes.
Yeah, hot takes. You just say a hot take on life.
So let's go around there. Maybe let's start with Seth since we've been going.
Wait, no.
Clockwise.
I don't even know how to do a hot take.
Okay, Johnny, let's introduce you to the game. It's basically just any hot take that you think you believe in that you feel is a bit, you know,
spicy.
That will spark a combo. Yeah. Spark a combo around it. Controversial, but like doesn't have to be deep.
My hot take is that the U.S. is one of the worst countries to live in the world.
Agreed.
Damn. That is pretty hot. That's a hot one.
Okay, I think I have one. It's always been an issue that I love tacos with ketchup.
Ooh.
Wait, you're Mexican.
And I'm full-blown Mexican.
Wait,
and apparently,
I've
never known that this was an issue until I got older. But tacos and ketchup.
Honestly, I'm going to try it.
I actually have two hot takes as a bonus for the people. The first one's kind of a fuckboy take, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway.
So here we go.
I believe that all people who get periods should get paid time off for the time that it's really intense. And I believe
how
that's
is
really
a fuckboy take.
And I want to take responsibility that. For that because it's probably from how horrid I am when I'm on my period.
How is that a frat boy or fuckboy hot take? I'm really
because sometimes say, like, the idea that women on their
straight,
period.
Yeah, hetero guys will appropriate takes that are really like pro-feminist, but not for the purpose of actually supporting women, for the purpose of getting with women.
No,
hence
fair, fair, that's not fair, it's a fuckboy take. I think it's a fuckboy take because some people say like women get their periods, therefore they shouldn't, like they're not as good at their jobs. They're not as reliable.
Oh,
so some
I
could
wasn't going with that lens, but yeah.
From that. But that's not what you mean.
I buy it, yeah.
But that's what I thought the disclaimer was.
Okay, and then my second hot take, which is like much more straightforward and actually is on the theme of this podcast. Like everyone should kiss their friends.
Ooh.
That's my hot take, like on the mouth.
Okay, my hot take, and I might ask that at this out if I change my mind.
Okay.
But you know how therapists are like, you should never compare your depression to other people.
Yeah.
I feel like that's wrong. Like, I think that we should be. I think we should be comparing ourselves to other people constantly. Like,
why?
Because I think some people do suffer more. And
that's
some
true.
People should suck it up. And I think their feelings are valid, but we also need to understand that some people, you know, some people's suffering is uncomparable.
Yeah.
And it's good to be grateful for what you have.
True.
And it definitely transitions you into a mindset of being more grateful.
Yes.
When you're not like, oh, well, you shouldn't compare your pain to someone else's. But like, yeah, you are an able-bodied functioning person. Like, yes, I should feel grateful for what I have.
Yeah, put things in perspective.
Agree.
Yeah,
I'm totally in the middle with that one.
That's not even
totally in the middle with that one.
I don't even feel like that's like that ought to take. You're not saying it from a place of like competing in the like the Olympics of suffering. You're saying from a place of gratitude if you can compare the situation that you're in to the situation that you know for a fact other people are in.
Yes.
Can feel better.
But while not belittling other people's situations as well. But I just think that it's a very unhelpful thing from my experience of being like you shouldn't compare, because I grew up in a place where it was like I'm so grateful for my education and stuff, so I don't feel bad for myself.
No, I totally agree. I honestly think that's like a very logical take. I don't know if it's hot, it's logical. All right, well, it was so fucking dope talking to all of you on Bush Babies. I can speak for myself. I fucking loved it. I loved the conversation that came out of today.
Yeah, I think we just want to extend our gratitude for like coming on and being so open and just cool ass people. We love you guys.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thanks.
We love you guys.
Hugs. Virtually.
Hugs, kisses.
Hand-holding.
Hugs, kisses, hand-holding, liquid death. Thank you so much for watching. You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube at Bush Babies World, as well as our personal accounts at Roxetarisa and at Rachel Traw. And make sure to join our Discord to be an official part of the BB community. Make sure to stay up to date with everything we have going on at www.bushbabiesworld.com.